Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, July 17th, 2014. Deadly fighting breaks out in the disputed region of Abyei.
We have lost five people killed by the name Manut Chol. Two, we have Jel Bol Jel. Three, we have Chan Choldeng. Four, we have Luan Aritok Mawan. Five, we have Ayom Malwe.
And South Sudan defends an arms purchase from China, saying the deal was made before fighting broke out in December.
This order was made since 2012. A step towards professionalizing our army.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Officials in Abyei say five people were killed in clashes between residents and Arab Misriya nomads in the disputed territory. Authorities say the clashes are the first since residents of Abyei held a controversial unilateral referendum in October of last year. Deng Mading, who chairs the Abyei Joint Oversight Committee, or AJOC, told reporters in Juba today that members of a pro-Khartoum Misriya militia clashed with residents of Abyei on Wednesday at a cattle camp in Gakmo, around 15 kilometers south of Abyei town. Mading says five people were killed in the fighting, including a toddler. Three more were wounded, he says, and one person is missing.
We have lost five people killed by the name Manut Chol. Two, we have Jel Bol Jel. Three, we have Chan Choldeng. Four, we have Lual Aritok Mawan. Five, we have Ayom Malwe. Ayom Malwe is a child of 2 years to 3 years. The injured people are Malwe Akej, two, Bol Jel Adol. Three, Cholichan. Cholichan also is a child of 7 years. Four, we have Kir Quinn. These are the four wounded people. We have missed people also. We have missed one by name called Manut Chok. We don't know whether he has run away or he has been killed.
Mading says members of the United Nations Interim Security Force, or Abyei, or UNISFA, recovered 150 cattle, which were reportedly looted by the Misriya during the attack. The governments of South Sudan and Sudan withdrew their forces from Abyei and handed control of the area over to the UN after the two sides fought for control of it. In the unilateral referendum held last year in Abyei, residents overwhelmingly voted to join South Sudan. But that vote was considered unofficial, and Khartoum has contested its legitimacy. Mading says the recent attack brings back the memories of similar attacks on the Abyei paramount chief Kual Deng Kual last year in May. He says the killers of Chief Kual are still at large.
What we have been demanding all the time is to prevent the crime, the killing, not to recover the looting. After somebody's killed, after somebody has taken something, then now you run after it. That is not the protection we want.
United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei was formed by the UN to protect civilians in the disputed area. Residents of Abyei depend on UNISFA for protection because there are no police.
We had called their coordinator office here, in officials. We called them and we have talked to them that what happened in Abyei was really a big slap on the face of UNISFA forces in Abyei. Because if somebody is coming in, penetrating up to Abyei town, near UNISFA compound, which is 1 kilo away, and then kill people, looted cattle, without being recovered, then that is a big slap on the face of UNISFA. And the responsibility is to be shouldered wholeheartedly on UNISFA forces in the area.
South Sudan, Sudan and the African Union Peace and Security Council adopted a resolution to hand over the final status of Abyei under a Sudan and South Sudan presidency. Mading says South Sudan's recent political crisis have stalled efforts to resolve the issue. South Sudan in Focus tried to contact Sudan's government and UNISFA on the latest attacks in Abyei. Waki Simon Wudu in Juba prepared that report. Officials in northern Bahar al-Ghazal say casualty figures from fighting between pro- and anti-government forces 2 days ago is rising. They say they've discovered the bodies of 5 government soldiers killed during fighting in Awil, and they say they expect more attacks to follow. For VOA News, Abraham Agath has the story from Awil.
After declining to speak publicly about the fighting for the last few days, the northern Bahar Ghazal state spokesperson Jacqueline Niebol Benjamin Ajonga today accused the rebels of targeting civilians and killing pro-government soldiers.
Yeah, of course, lately we had that along Awil Center, which is Araya, there are about 5 people who are found dead. And even because of late discovery of their death, they couldn't be identified. Who are they?
Yesterday, local officials said fighting between pro- and anti-government forces began Monday and continued through Tuesday night in parts of Awil West and Awil North counties. Niebol says more attacks were reported in the same area last night.
Yesterday evening, another group passed through the same route again, collided with the SPLA, but returned back.
She appealed to Awil town residents to remain calm, saying the government will ensure their security.
The message is that we don't want people to panic so much, but I want to assure to our civilians that I want to assure them that our gallant forces are really doing their best, and the fighting is somewhere in between Awil West and Awil North, and we have our SPLA forces in that area, and they are now on control of all the...
Officials say scores of people were injured during the fighting and are being treated at Awil Civil Hospital. The hospital's director, Garang Thomas Dell, says the 5 people who were injured had superficial wounds.
Yeah, of course, lately we had that along Awil Center, which is Araya, there are about 5 people who are found dead. And even because of...
hospital and describes what happened when the fighting broke out. Niebol says scores of civilians have been displaced from their homes by the fighting. The government is trying to determine how many people have fled. This marks the 7th day of fighting in this area since anti-government forces are said to have first attacked villages in northern Bahar Ghazal's Awil Central County.
That was VOA fellow Nabil Biagio, who voiced that report for Abraham Agath. South Sudan denies that a recent shipment of weapons from China was purchased to fight anti-government forces loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. As Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba, officials insist the weapons were bought before the violence erupted in mid-December.
According to a report published by Bloomberg News last Tuesday, Juba has taken delivery of a consignment of new infantry weapons from the China-based North Industries Group Corporation called Norino. The report says the $14.5 million shipment includes anti-tank guided missiles, missile launchers, grenades, assault rifles, and machine guns, all of which are expected to boost the army's firepower against the anti-government forces. Pro- and anti-government forces continue to do battle in 4 states, despite a ceasefire signed by President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar in May. While South Sudanese Defense Minister Kwol Manyang confirmed to VOA yesterday that his government had purchased a weapons consignment supplied by Chinese arms manufacturer Norino, but denies the weapons were bought with the intention of fighting the rebels.
This order was made since 2012. A step towards professionalizing our army.
The Bloomberg report says the new anti-tank weapons may have been bought to counter Sudan's decision to purchase 110T72M1 tanks between 2010 and 2012. Manyang says during the interim period between 2005 and 2011, the Southern Sudanese and Sudanese governments were not allowed to purchase weapons. He says the consignment was planned right after the then semi-autonomous Southern Sudan government declared its independence in 2011.
Any army in the world has the right to arm itself. We are a sovereign government. We are not fighting with another country. And we have that right to arm the government. We are not killing anybody. We are here to defend the country, the institution and integrity of the country.
Bloomberg reports the shipment left the Chinese port of Xinzhangjiang in Guangdong province on May 16th aboard the Fenghuang Song and arrived in the Kenyan port of Mombasa on June 7th. Well after the cessation of hostilities agreement was signed. The revelation of the recent arms purchase is likely to create the impression that the Kiir administration is not interested in resolving the conflict through peaceful means. China has good relations with South Sudan and is the recipient of most of South Sudan's oil output. According to the Small Arms Survey, a Swiss-based research group, Chinese-made weapons have been used widely in rebellions that broke out in South Sudan's Jonglei and Upper Nile states shortly after the country gained independence. Manyang called on IGAD monitors to investigate recent attacks in northern Barakazal state as well as other attacks in Upper Nile, Jonglei and Unity states to determine who is violating the ceasefire. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Officials are looking for ways to create jobs for South Sudan's young people and make their future brighter. At an event in Juba to mark World Population Day, they called for better education opportunities and for employers to respect a rule that says South Sudanese should be given preference for management-level jobs. But as Philip Aleu reports from Juba, none of the officials has any illusions that things will improve until the fighting stops.
Helen Achiro Lutara, the Undersecretary of Labor, Public Service and Human Resources, says unemployment is extremely high among South Sudan youth. The government does not have precise statistics, but Achiro says a large part of high youth unemployment is because many young stars do not have the basic education or the skills to get a job. Speaking at a event called Investing in Youth, Achiro said many employers are not respecting a rule that says 80% of management-level employees in the private and non-governmental sectors should be South Sudanese. The government is trying to fix that, she says.
You find the practices that is happening in some of the organizations is that when they talk of 80%, they would make sure that at the lower level, not the managerial level, they get so many nationals, messengers, might be drivers, and all this. And then they tell them, no, we have already fulfilled the 80%, even more. Maybe we have even 90%. But if you go and make those analysis, you find that in the managerial level, might be either 1% or none. But we are working out things that we will make sure such kind of thing must stop. It's a real fight.
Achiro says the Ministry of Labor has dropped a bill that aims to strengthen the 80% rule. He did not say when the bill is likely to be tabled in Parliament. More than half the population of South Sudan is under the age of 25, and Barnabas Issa of the United Nations Population Fund says around 1 in 6 are between the ages of 15 and 24. Issa says that in addition to the many challenges South Sudan faces, it has a huge opportunity to educate its young people and help them to become informed citizens who are able to contribute to peace, development, and community productivity. But he says the fighting that started 7 months ago has denied many young people their right to an education. As a result of the conflict, sexual violence has gone up too, he says.
Since December 2013, when the conflict in South Sudan started, a lot of young girls have faced sexual harassment and gender-based violence. Some of them have even been given in marriage, even within IDP camps. This, we can say, is as a result of the conflict. But what South Sudan requires is investing in this young generation. The investment will definitely yield dividends.
Josephine Nabuom, Deputy Minister of Youth and Culture, agrees that gender-based violence is threatening the future of many girls. She says post-marriages and rape are just two of the challenges that prevent girls from going to school beyond their early teens. But she says there are solutions.
We encourage school boarding schools for our girls. I will give you an example of myself. I grew up in a boarding school. It's a Catholic school. So in the boarding school, we are really taken care of as girls. And also we need to make compulsory no payment for girls, a free school for ladies in South Sudan.
But Nabuom says that resources are limited and policies like free education for girls are unlikely to be implemented anytime soon. She says donors need to step up and help the government to fight what she calls, quote, bad cultures, unquote, in South Sudan. Achira says even if the war ended today, South Sudan's young people will still face high unemployment unless they fight for themselves and take jobs in sectors like agriculture.
If you organize these youth, they would become self-employed. They would be getting money. The money that the foreigners are bringing things from outside, bringing tomatoes, bringing Irish potatoes, bringing, name it, so many things. We all wait from where? From Uganda, from Kenya. If our youth are active in this area, then they would be getting money even before they get the so-called white-collar job that everybody needs. Because most people, they do not want to go to any other job apart from the white-collar job. And that is where we have a problem.
Achira says the Labour Ministry is doing what it can to invest in young people. But she admits that until the fighting stops, and even afterwards, the challenges facing South Sudan youth will be enormous. For BOA News, I am Philip Aleu in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Dripping water taps, wastewater from washing, and rain can form pools of stagnant water where malaria-carrying mosquitoes and other parasites breed. But there are ways to minimize the risk. First, don't dispose of water in a low-lying area which doesn't drain naturally. If there's a stagnant pool near your living space, sweep the water aside. Then, in that spot, dig a hole at least a meter deep. Refill it with sand or gravel, which is porous and allows the water into the soil so a pool doesn't form there. To help protect you and your family from disease, do what you can to eliminate stagnant water.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN's top humanitarian official speaks out against violence in Sudan and South Sudan.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what was your favorite childhood game?
I play shedit. Shedit, you just hold your leg with your hand and you run with the one leg. That is the one I like.
It was something, we call it a dodgeball, when we were playing at school. It was played by mostly girls, young girls at school. So like somebody stands at this end and then the other one at the other end, and you throw the ball, you're supposed to dodge it. You have to be in the middle. If it hits you, then you have failed.
I like playing football until 2008 when I got injured, so I didn't play it again. So I changed my mind and I play volleyball now, which is my best favorite game at this time.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations top humanitarian official, Valerie Amos, warned the UN Security Council this week that South Sudan is on the brink of disaster unless the international community intervenes.
If we don't take urgent action now, we will see a major humanitarian crisis unfolding in South Sudan with respect to food insecurity and the possibility of famine.
Amos told reporters yesterday, after briefing the Security Council on the worsening humanitarian situation in South Sudan, that ongoing fighting and the breakdown of the peace process there is putting hundreds of thousands of lives at risk.
My greatest fear is that we, because of the conflict, because the agreement that was reached between the two parties, that agreement is being broken every day and the fighting continuing, that we will see a very quick deterioration of the food security situation with the potential for a famine being declared very soon.
She also warns that famine is also a strong possibility in parts of southern Kordofan in Sudan. The UN and international community say bombing raids carried out by the government in Khartoum in South Kordofan and Blue Nile states have forced large numbers of Sudanese from their homes and have interrupted farming.
We have already heard that the Famine Early Warning Systems Network has forecast that emergency levels of food insecurity are likely to persist among the internally displaced and host communities in SPLM North-controlled areas of South Kordofan between now and September. I warned the Council that if aerial bombardment continues to disrupt agricultural activities, we can expect the impact to extend well beyond the harvest in September.
Amos called on the Security Council and, quote, anyone with any kind of political influence, end quote, to pressure the warring parties in South Sudan and Sudan to stop the violence. She also called for the UN's humanitarian operations in the two Sudans to be scaled up significantly. The UN says 1.5 million people have been displaced and around 4 million face alarming food insecurity as a result of 7 months of fighting in South Sudan. It also says that tens of thousands have been displaced by violence in southern Kordofan, which is one of Sudan's biggest food-producing areas. Long before the development of agriculture, our prehistoric ancestors had a good knowledge of plants, not just for food, but for medicine. Researchers found evidence of this by studying some ancient teeth found in central Sudan. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Dental hygiene has become an important part of modern-day healthcare, and many millions of dollars are spent every year to keep teeth and gums healthy. One of the things dentists warn their patients about is dental calculus, or tartar, a very hard form of plaque that forms around teeth. It may take a lot of scraping or the use of ultrasonic tools to remove it. That type of plaque has given researchers an insight into people who lived thousands of years ago along the White Nile at Al Khadey. It's about 25 kilometers south of Omdurman. Karen Hardy is the lead author of the study, published in PLOS One. She and her colleagues went to the site to analyze the compounds clinging to the ancient teeth.
We were approached by the excavators of the Sudanese site. We were very interested in working at this site because it has a long sequence and it's also in a relatively hot area, and we wanted to see whether the chemical compounds survived right through the sequence. And in fact, in this hot place, we discovered that they survived very well indeed.
Hardy is a research professor at the Catalan Institution for Research and Advanced Studies at the Autonomous University of Barcelona.
It's a little bit like when you go out into an archaeological site. Until you start looking, you don't really know what you're going to find. We were hoping for evidence of ancient diet, particularly evidence of the use of plants in ancient diet before agriculture developed. That's something that is very difficult to get hold of. It's very difficult to find.
But they did find it, and the tartar told the tale. The people of Al Khadey were well aware of the use of plants thousands of years before agriculture arrived on the scene in 4500 BC, and long after.
We found evidence of plants. We could see the physical evidence in the form of the microfossils on microscope slides. And we also got chemical compounds that pointed, in this case specifically, to this plant, purple nutsedge. right through the sequence. In ancient Egypt, it was used as a component of perfume, it was used in water purification, and it also has a lot of medicinal uses that have been recorded by the ancient Greeks and the ancient Egyptians.
It's believed purple nut sedge may have had the ability to inhibit the growth of Streptococcus mutans. It's bacteria that help cause tooth decay, and its effectiveness appears to be borne out in many ancient teeth which showed few cavities. However, purple nut sedge is not so popular today. In fact, Hardy says, it's now considered a scourge in tropical and subtropical regions. It's been called the world's most expensive weed because it's so invasive and costs so much to eradicate once it invades agricultural fields. Nevertheless, Hardy says, the discovery of its widespread use in ancient Central Sudan tells a lot about the population.
It's very clear that they were very well integrated into their environments, that they understood their environments very well, that they knew how to exploit the things that were available in their environments. I think that we've probably grossly underestimated their abilities, actually.
The findings also shed light on their prehistoric diet and dispel some misconceptions.
Up to the present, the evidence has not been there for plants. There has been a strong focus on the use of meat products, simply because that is what is found. It's found in evidence for animal bones spread across sites, strong evidence of protein, and there simply has not been the evidence there for the plants. Now, hopefully, with this kind of study that we're doing, we're going to be able to start getting closer to identifying some of the plant-based things that people ate, because, of course, they really had to eat plants. You can't survive on protein alone.
Professor Hardy and her colleagues are now working on many different archaeological sites with varying time periods. She says they may discover the use of other plants by ancient people long since forgotten. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
That's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Abracadabra by Kofi Olomide from the Democratic Republic of Congo. We've been listening.